I thought we would continue with carbohydrates today, and I thought we would continue with our disaccharides today. So somebody remind me what a disaccharide is. When you have two smaller sugar units that are put together, and we've studied two disaccharides so far. One of them is maltose. What are the sugar units that are part of maltose? Glucose and glucose. That's right. It's two units of glucose put together. What about lactose? That's the other sugar we've done so far. And galactose. So remember that if we want to think of going from left to right, the way that we've been drawing the structures, where we can, we've been trying to write the enantiomer positions on the right-hand side. And you might remember when I drew lactose, the part of the molecule that can actually open and close the glucose portion, because it's only a hemiacetal. That we tend to write on the right. In the middle of the molecule, we have a full acetal because galactose has made what kind of sugar derivative? What is the link that we call between the two sugars? Enantiomer is the carbon through which it's connected, but the type of linkage is referred to as a glycosidic linkage. In other words, we've made a glycoside, a derivative of a sugar. So the next sugar we're going to tackle is sucrose, which is a glycoside as well, but it's a slightly different type of structure because both enantiomeric positions end up being trapped, you could say. Now, sucrose is scary-looking formal name is 2-O-alpha-D-glucopyridosyl. Beta D fructofuranoside. Notice it does not end with the os ending, because as we're going to see once we eventually get to the structure, it is not a free sugar. It's bound up in a full acetal. Both sugars are. Now, this is our first furanose structure we're going to be drawing. And we're going to discover that when we do it for fructose, it's not such a bad thing to do. But before we get there, let's just, for practice sake, do a furanose of an aldose and see what that entails. So since we need to do alpha-glucopyranose anyways, or sorry, alpha-D-glucose, let's do alpha-D-glucofuranose for practice. And then we'll come back and do sucrose. So this is a little side venture here. Alpha D glucofuranose. So instead of trying to jump straight to the ring as I might have done in the lab lecture yesterday, let's go ahead and do this in linear form, because this is, again, our first furanose that we're drawing. So D glucose, what's the configuration? OH from top to bottom, what are the positions? Right, so you can either say OH, H, OH, OH, or some people are programmed to say right, left, right, right. Remember that it is the enantiomer position that's automatically going to be part of the ring, and that's true whether it's an aldose or a ketose. Carbon 1 itself is not necessarily part of the ring, and it won't be if we have a ketose, so that we'll get to with the fructose in a moment. So here's carbon 2, 3, 4, which means if we take the oxygen off of carbon 4, that would be the fifth atom that could be part of the ring. So next thing I'm going to do is make the five-membered ring. Now I create one more stereocenter. I have two stereocenters here that are the same. I've made a ring, and I'll worry about that aspect of it in a moment. There is one more stereocenter here. And then we have that bottom CH2OH group. Now, in order to figure out whether I have the alpha or beta form, I need to figure out whether the rest of this part of the ring is, or not part of the ring, the rest of the structure that's not in the ring is it cis or trans to the OH group that I'm about to make. And we want it to end up being trans. But therefore, like before with the furanoses, we're going to have to turn the structure. But remember that turning a Fischer projection 90 degrees is not allowed. So yes, we can turn the stereocenter in the fact that we can exchange these three groups here to get the oxygen where we want it to be. But I'm drawing one of these groups like a Fischer projection. So we're going to have to do this somewhat improperly, but we want to make sure that we preserve the correct configuration of the stereocenter as we do it. So let me ask you, is this bottom stereocenter R or S? Okay, let's see if that is correct. Oxygen is going to be priority number one because it's the highest atomic number. Then we have carbons attached. On one carbon, we have attached to it an oxygen, another carbon, and a hydrogen. At the bottom carbon, all that is attached to it is an oxygen, a hydrogen, and a hydrogen. So where we can compare first, carbon is more important than hydrogen, so the top substituent is number two, Gesundheit. The bottom is number three, the hydrogen is number four. It appears to be counterclockwise, but the hydrogen is pointed towards us. So this is really R. Now, does anybody have any questions about determining that R and S? Because we've now at least three times in class done this kind of exercise, have we not? Where we've taken a Fischer projection and determined whether something is R or S. So, of course, you being the observant students that you are, you're now assessing the likelihood of you having to determine R and S from a Fischer projection on your exams. If you're not, I would suggest you do so. So, any questions about determining this R and S? So, I'm going to twist the bottom, not the bottom stereocenter, the stereocenter where the ring comes in. I'm going to twist it to get the oxygen where I want it. That means I'll no longer be properly writing the bottom stereocenter, but I'm going to remember that it's R and ignore the way I'm drawing it for the moment. Because really the reason I'm doing it is to figure out where the alpha and beta positions are. So as long as we keep that in mind, then it's okay that we're doing this because it's for visualization sake. So I'll say rotate carbon number 1, 2, 3. And I'll just highlight at the top, I'll put question marks or so. Yeah, I didn't forget about it, but that's what we're working on, trying to figure out which side is alpha or beta. Now, I gave you a rule, a shorthand to remember the other day, where for D sugars, alpha always points down, beta always points up, but that's because of which way that last stereocenter does point, or the last carbon does point in the ring. Of course, if you start going up the chain to the next position up, well, there you're not guaranteed any particular configuration. D sugars, the last stereocenter is always on the right. For the other stereocenters, they could be anything potentially. So in this case, since I'm using glucose with that third stereocenter's oxygen that third stereocenter, that is correct, but I left out a stereocenter. Oh dear. Go back and fix this. I thought something sounded odd. It's got to be carbon 4, because that's where the third stereocenter is. So everything else I've said so far is still correct. I just forgot to put one line here, and that's where the question mark should be. Okay. So, going up on glucose, yes, the next stereocenter up is still oriented towards the right, so I'm still going to twist it around the way that I normally would. But if this was a sugar where this stereo center was on the left instead, give me an example of a sugar where the third stereo center is on the left. Galactose. Give me two others. Talos. Eidos. And the last one would be gulos. So those, if the oxygen's on the left, you're going to have to turn the group the other way, which means alpha will be pointed the opposite direction that it would for something like the pyranose form of glucose. So what I'm just trying to tell you is all the examples we saw until the day, we were only doing aldohexoses, which is why you could come up with these quick and easy rules to remember which direction things point. But the point of this example is to show you once you go outside of that, once you do furanoses or once we do ketoses, things may change a little bit as far as how do we do it. So moving on, let me redraw this group. Now the hydrogen that was here on the third carbon is now going to be rotated around onto the right. The ring itself is now going to be pointed down the way I want. I've got that new stereo center, and I'm just for ease going to put R here to represent the rest of the chain. Well, notice that now I know which way the R is pointing. Now I can figure out which way alpha would be, because I'm trying to do the alpha D-glucofuranose. So alpha means trans. So now I've got my correct Fischer projection form. Now let's tip this into a Hayworth projection. Hayworth projection would still work the same way as before. Sometimes, to make the structure a little more symmetric looking, you might see it drawn more like this, where the oxygen's almost in the center of the molecule instead of off to one side. Main point is that we're going to have four rungs like this. Imagine a ladder instead of five, because we are now dealing with a furanose instead of a pyranose. Everything else as far as transferring the groups to this structure is the same. In other words, what was on the right of the Fischer projection is now going to be on the bottom of the Hayworth projection. What was on the left of the Fischer is going to be on the top of the Hayworth. So from on the right-hand side here, I have OH, OH, H, H. OH, OH, H, H. So hydrogen, hydrogen, OH. And then I've got two more carbons coming off the side chain. Normally, there's only one kink in this part of the structure, you could say, because it's usually CH2OH. Well, there's the CH2OH. That is the stereo center that got rotated around. So do I write a dash or a wedge to make that R? Because it has to be R. Now you could do it the hard way, which is what you all are doing, or you could do it the easy way. Because if I view this like I'm peering down over the molecule like this, notice that the two carbon-carbon bonds would be pointed away from me. And notice where my eyebrow is. It would be as if, let's make sure I'm doing this right. Oh dear. If I'm doing that, looking down on the molecule like that, or actually from your perspective, I'm doing it like that. But what does that mean? That means that the, no, it's still wrong, isn't it? I'm sorry. Which way am I go? Which way do I go? Okay, so that means the CH2OH group is that way, correct?
Correct.
Down below me. Well, in the regular Fischer projection, isn't that same CH2OH group down below me? Yes. So the easy questions you all could answer, right? So here, this OH group is on the right, correct? So if I'm looking down on the molecule like this, then if the OH group is on the right, do I use a dash or a wedge? A wedge. But that is the one difficulty with writing furanoses of aldohexoses, is that you do have one stereocenter that you're going to have to represent in dash or wedge form. So let me walk through what I did here, because I know I might have thrown you off with that left out rung there. So started out with glucose. We're hopefully very familiar with glucose at this point. Oxygen on the fourth carbon is what I'm using to make the ring this time, again, because I want a furanose, which is only a five-membered ring. I start that process, but I don't know which way to put alpha, the top enomeric OH group, once it makes the ring, because when the ring is not in the backbone, you can't tell which way it is. So I put the ring in the backbone, same type of thing as I've done before. I took the whole bottom part of the molecule here and called that R, just to make this easier to draw. But that meant when I did go into the cyclic form, I had to resolve what should be the correct way to draw that stereocenter. And to make sure I've drawn that correctly, let's take a look at it here. We have the oxygen, which is priority one. We have a carbon that's got oxygen, carbon, and hydrogen on it. That's priority two. We have CH2OH, which means you have an oxygen-hydrogen-hydrogen substituted. There is an implicit hydrogen in the back. This is clockwise precession of the substituents, so yes, it really is R. So yes, whichever way I end up there looking at the molecule, I end up doing it correctly. Questions about that? Don't even ask. Yes, if I showed you this example, you might have to do an aldohexose as a furanose instead. Yes?
Can you repeat how you get to the last stereocenter after you put the oxygen in the ring?
So after I did this, how did I get here?
No, how you did that.
How I got here. Okay. So let me redraw this as the following. Wait, that is what I wanted. Yes, no, that's it. So I don't want to draw any more on that structure because there's enough lines and colors going on anyways. But from everything below the stereocenter I need to rotate, I'm calling that whole thing R. And not R like I wrote there to show the stereocenter, but R like radical, the substituent notation. So once I'm here, it's easier to see that I move the hydrogen where the oxygen where the R group is, and the R group where the hydrogen is, which that's related to our discussion we had several lectures back now about how if you swap rotationally three substituents at any point of a Fischer projection, it gives you back exactly the same stereo configuration again. So it's exactly what we did in the past. And now it looks like it. Before, we had these other stereocenters, though, that were clouding what I was doing. Does that make more sense now? Okay. Yes?
Can you explain how you got the five-membered ring?
How I got the five-membered ring? Because I chose the oxygen that was from carbon 4, whereas every other example we've seen so far, it's this bottom OH group we used to be taking into the ring. So if I take the carbonyl has to be in the ring because that's where the closure occurs, the carbonyl center. So that's carbon 1, 2, 3, 4. If I went one more carbon and then to the oxygen, oxygen would be the sixth atom in that line. But I didn't go there. I went to the fourth carbon, went to that oxygen, which is just the fifth atom. And that's the oxygen that attacks the carbonyl, which is why I ended up with a five-member ring. Yes?
How did you guess
I didn't have to guess once I had the R group here, because alpha means that that R group and the OH group are trans to each other. Before, I called it the CH2OH group because we were limiting all our examples to aldohexoses, aldohexopyranoses, more specifically. So we never had to worry about any more exotic example. So that's why, on purpose, I'm now showing you an aldohexofuranose. Yes?
Could you go over again about the Steven syndrome?
About this thing right here?
Yeah.
About this?
Yeah.
Okay. So what I did is to make this part of it easier, I said R, so I didn't have to think. But once I do know where it goes, you can't just put a line here. You have to show properly what the stereocenter is. So if I wrote this carbon-carbon bond and that carbon-carbon bond in the plane like I have now, then the OH group either has to be a dash or a wedge. And instead of trying to sit there and go one, two, three, you know, instead of trying to worry about priorities, I went back to the Fischer projection. Because the Fischer projection, if you have the two carbon-carbon bonds in a line, like I do here, and notice that by putting my viewpoint here, both of these are slanted away from the eye, correct? Well, when something is away, that means it's vertical in a Fischer projection. So why not take advantage of the Fischer projection I've already got? Because when viewing down upon that center, the OH group is on the right. Well, the carbonyl, which is at the top of the Fischer projection, is somewhere in here. It's actually right there. So from the perspective of the visualization point, it's up the way it should be in the Fischer projection. The CH2OH is down. So that means the OH group I want to be on the right-hand side, which is towards you, and so that's why I made it a wedge. Do we want to move on to the simpler example of sucrose? Because sucrose, when we take a ketose and make a furanose out of it, we don't have this whole silly stereocenter problem. Let's see that, in fact. So for sucrose, we want the beta D form of fructofuranose. So let's draw it by itself. Beta D fructofuranose. So what does the structure of fructose look like? It's a ketose. So that means that the top is going to be CH2OH, and then you have the carbonyl. Now, remember that we've already seen a way that we can interconvert between aldoses and ketoses. If you don't recall, I started with glucose and I made a double enol out of it, where I tautomerized, put a double bond between the top two carbons, and that meant that one or the other carbon eventually could turn into the carbonyl. Now, of course, if we have this in a bottle, it's not going to do it on its own. But technically, once we put it in solution, you could get a distribution of products. And it turns out to be rough. Oh, what was it? I just looked at it before class. Something like 4% mannose, 34% fructose, and the rest of it 60-something percent glucose. The spontaneous relative concentrations at room temperature in water. Reason I'm pointing this out is that, probably not today because we're going to run out of time, but we're going to get to this thing called the Tollens test, which is a way for testing what are known as reducing sugars. And I need to explain, one, what does that reagent normally react with? Two, why does it react with more reagents than it should when sugars are involved? And then what does this information of this test tell us? So if you are reading over the weekend, and you want to read ahead, look for the Tollens test. Back to fructose, part of the reason of telling this story is to remind us that fructose is structurally related to both glucose and mannose. Like arabinose, it has the same bottom three stereocenters. So if glucose is right, left, right, right, then we have left, right, right. And D fructose, of course, because that's the biologically active one. Now notice that in terms of counting carbons, if I was going to name any kind of derivative of this, the carbonyl is actually at position 2 now. Now we'll come back to that idea in just a moment. But if I'm just counting carbons for the purpose of determining the ring, I'll label it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We notice that now the fifth atom is the oxygen at that bottom stereocenter. And let's go ahead and try to now turn this into the, we want to get to beta D-fructofuranose. So we'll make the ring. Now, how do I want to say this? I'm going to take the CH2OH group and call it R for the moment. So what I get is this. The bottom oxygen, I'll connect up to the top of the ring. I have the two stereocenters above it, which are not involved in the reaction, so they're exactly the same way that they were. We're going to have the anomer position, which I don't yet know where to put it. Although if you have done some practice, you're going to notice that the ring is on the right. The oxygen in the ring is on the right, which means like the aldo hexopyranoses, I'm going to need to rotate that stereocenter clockwise to get the oxygen in the ring. Now that I have it on the left, more importantly, I have it on one side or the other, or even more importantly that, I've got the oxygen in the ring now. So because this has ended up on the left, and I want cis at the top because I want beta, now I can figure out where to put that last OH group. And please change what I just wrote on the right-hand side, because it's not H, it's R. Which doesn't feel right somehow. Hold on. Something looks wrong. Let's see if it's just faulty memory or what. No, that's correct. Okay. Just making sure. So are we okay up to this point? Now let's go into the Haworth projection. Standard Haworth, we put the anomer position on the right-hand side. Again, the things on the right end up on the bottom, the things on the left end up on the top. So on the right, I have that R group. Which actually, that R group's not so complicated, but it did let us more easily see what's going on here. The R group is CH2OH. Then I have hydrogen on the bottom, then OH. And then, like the D sugars normally are, since I've used that last position, the last CH2OH is up. So notice we have two different CH2OHs, and what I was checking in the notes for is that yes, they really are pointed opposite directions of each other. So considerably easier to draw this furanose than an aldo furanose, aldo hexo. Questions about this? All right, then let's join that now into sucrose. So it's off the top of the page now. But sucrose has got alkylglucopyranose as the substituent. So let's try to do that without making the linear structure. Because glucose, by now, we should know that starting one away from the anomer position is down, up, down. And with the D sugar, the last group is up. Yeah. It's not two OHs, it's an OH and a CH2OH, because this is what was called R in the Fischer projection, which is not on the page. Hold on. So you notice over here, it's not just an OH at the top, or a carbonyl or something like we normally would have. Normally, in fact, there's just a hydrogen stuck there. And so when we make the new stereocenter, there's nothing else to write except a hydrogen. But now we've got CH2OH that's being pushed around, and that whole CH2OH is on one side or the other. To make the Fischer projection easier to read, that's why I wrote R, but then I switched back once I went to the Hayworth projection. So here we have alpha D glucopyranose, and alpha means I'm going to have the OH group down. Now look at the two sugars, because at the top I've got beta D fructofuranose, and down at the bottom I have the alpha D glucopyranose. But notice that if I want to have both anomer positions on the right as I've got it, I've got to stack one molecule directly on top of the other and write a long bond in between them. But I could do like what I did with galactose, which is to either flip one ring, in this case not upside down, but take it and just swivel it 180 degrees this way, like that. So you could draw one ring pointed one way and the other ring pointed the other way. Leonardo, you had a question. Pyranose. There we go. Pen is too slow to keep up with my brain, is the problem. So I'm going to choose to take the fructofuranose and then turn it 180 degrees around without flipping it or anything like that. So put the two together. And here's the glucose part again. And I know I'm going to be putting the fructose part here. Since I'm swinging it 180 around in the plane, that's going to make the ring oxygen now pop towards us. Here's the rest of the substituents for glucose. And then let's put on the substituents for fructose. Degrees around, so it'll be this. And just, so I want to make sure. Yep, correct. So there is fructose. And notice that it is a double acetal. Now, I'd mentioned this term reducing sugar, and I just want to point out that this is an acetal for both sugars. Which means what? Which means this is not in equilibrium with its ring opened form. And not quite. quite enough time. So we'll do that on Monday to talk about that aspect of it. But I want to just show you where we're going to go with this. Any sugar, like even the one right here, the glucopyranose by itself. Let's take what we learned on Wednesday. If I took just this molecule and put it in water, what's going to happen to its optical rotation?
Change.
Why?
Change the other one.
How? How many of you have read the carbohydrate chapter at all? You all know what you got in the first exam. Isn't that encouragement enough for you to study harder for the second exam?
It's called the weekend.
It's called the weekend, I see. Okay, I'll recall that. The weekend in sunny San Diego for some of us. No, it's the ring opens and closes because it's a hemiacetal. Protonate, open, attacking, protonate, protonate, open, attacking, protonate. To open and close and open and close. Every time it opens, you make the carbonyl planar again. Which means when it closes, both the alpha and beta forms become possible. They won't be 50-50, but they'll both be possible. So the point is that compound on the left, because it is a hemiacetal, is going to be able to open and close spontaneously. Acetals are tougher, and so this acetal is not in equilibrium with its linear form. That's an important point that we'll come back to on Monday. Yes? Yes. Say that one more time.
You draw a wedge on the alpha D glucopyranose.
Ah, but Lotus, we've switched to the pyranose. So I did the furanose just as an example. I started the lecture saying, I want to get to sucrose. Then I said, but that means we're going to write a furanose. We hadn't done a furanose before, and I wanted to start with one of the tough ones because it came up in one or more of the sections. Wait, how would you do it for 6-carbon sugar, for aldose? So we did it, got it out of the way. Now we're switched just to, why did I write fructose there? We switched to sucrose. Now, yes.
Can you explain the configuration of fructose again?
Which aspect of it? What I did at the end here to make the structure look the way it did? Because here, I'll draw. Here's fructose by itself.
Yeah, how you got from there to the sucrose.
So if you watch me, here's that CH2OH group that I've got circled there. Kind of down here on your right, I'm just going to spin 180 degrees around like that. And notice now it's on the left. At the same time, notice how the oxygen that was in the back of the ring, by default, the Hayworth projections, the oxygen's in back like that. If I'm spinning but not reflecting 180 degrees around, that means that the oxygen is now in front the way it is in here. The two carbons that are behind me, the two carbons that are in front of me, I have OH up here, OH down here. I turn 180 degrees around. Notice that now behind, from your perspective, I'm backwards, there we go. It did take a few years of teaching for me to look at the board, look at you, and then do this, and look at the board, and do this, and have the rights and left and right. And, okay. So, looking this way, but now looking back at the molecule, I can tell that the OH group is here and here, correct? Now, if I spin 180 degrees around, now I can see just like it's there, and it's there. Does it make sense now what I did?
No.
Then build a model. Quite seriously, if you build a model, it'll become evident in half a second. Because all that's going on is... No, but this brings up a point. How do you take a three-dimensional object on two-dimensional paper and in your brain rotate it in two dimensions, even though it's three-dimensional? That's what... Because... No. Are you looking at the ring like this or like this? In other words, you're sitting up in the top there, so if I've got the ring here, you're looking down at it like this, so the back appears to be above the front. That's what we have up there. That's the same thing we have down there. So if I rotate, what was in back now is in front. It's just your tilt of your perspective, that's all. Nothing physically happened. It's just 180-degree rotation, but you're not looking at it on the plane, you're looking at it like that. Skewing it. Does that make sense? If it doesn't, the honest answer is build a model. Because if you can't visualize it, I can't do anything to make you see it. Yes? Yes, Emilio.
How do you
have the number? Okay, so... Which I made this comment yesterday to section 3, and I think I said it to these two sections as well. Please, as I'm writing things down, if I'm making a comment about the way I do it, make sure that that gets into your notes as well. Because I did number that 1, 2, 3, 4, but those are not the nomenclature numbers. Nomenclature, the carbonyl is position 2. Why I was numbering the way I was at that point is to show what oxygen would become incorporated into the 5-membered ring. And since the carbonyl is automatically the beginning of the 5-membered ring, that's why I labeled it 1. Any other questions? Okay, now let's take this molecule and react it with silver oxide and methyl iodide. And let's say there's a massive excess of both of those. What's going to happen? You won't know the answer unless you did read.
Reduction.
No, good guess. Because we did see this silver. Where did we see this just the other day? Ah, the elimination reaction, correct? The Hoffman elimination. Right? So we had, you had your tetraalkyl ammonium salt where the halide of that salt precipitates because of the silver. It's left over as hydroxide, correct? Well, what's going to happen in this case? Because I don't have an amine anymore. I don't have an ammonium salt. But silver oxide in solution still acts like hydroxide. What's going to happen to that molecule in hydroxide? What will happen to the acetal in hydroxide? Oh, 12B, simple question. Acetals plus base equals nothing. What acetal or ketal protecting group did we use for alcohols last quarter? That's not why. Which one? No, again, a molecule name. Let me remind you all of this. The DHP protecting group? This is an acetal, is it not? What happens to that when we throw a Grignard at it? That's the point. It's base stable. So back to this question. What is going to happen to the acetal in these conditions? Nothing. Do I get to do one of my, what is that, the celebrity? What's his name that's on the TV now that's got the date and he's being all flirty with the Siri going on here? Is that who it is? Okay, yeah. If you haven't seen the commercial, you have no idea what I'm talking about. So then back to chemistry again. If the acetal is not going to do anything, what is? What would happen with enough time to the OH groups in hydroxide? And notice we don't have hydroxide here, because what would happen if I had a solution of sodium hydroxide and methyl iodide? It would make methanol, wouldn't it? It would never react with anything else. So we can't put sodium hydroxide in solution. But what if we were really sneaky? What if somehow hydroxide got deprotonated by oxide? Well, couldn't an SN2 reaction happen? You make an alkoxide, you have one of the world's best alkylating agents. Methyl iodide, you know, the stuff that they're throwing on strawberries that everybody's up in arms about because it's that reactive a compound. That's the same methyl iodide. Well, in other words, you're going to put CH3 groups everywhere. There's an OH group. It's called exhaustive alkylation. Same exhaustive alkylation you saw with the Hoffman reaction, just different place. Different place, different reagents. And we're going to run out of time for this, but let me tell you where we're going with this on Monday then. I've got all of these ether groups now, except where? Except where we had the acetal, because that OH group is not available until you hydrolyze it. Well, what does that mean? That means once we react this derivative with water and acid and force the rings to open back up again, whichever carbon bears a free OH group on it was the OH group that was part of the ring. So in other words, if you have a sugar you've never seen before, you can derivatize it like this, hydrolyze it, and then figure out what the ring size was. And that's what we'll do Monday. So read up on reducing sugars, Tollens reagent, and this exhaustive methylation for Monday. What temperature is this? Chapter. 21, it's the carbohydrate chapter, right? 22? 22. Yes, I'm looking at it right now, and it's chapter 22.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.